Hi, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, good. How are you?
Great. I'm on the trail.
Congratulations on, you're making it to the November ballot, so I'm proud of you. I've been kind of following the campaign, but yeah, I'm so glad you came back, first of all. Thank you. But also, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you for having me. I am great. I am excited. I am motivated. I am ready to get this thing on and popping. I have less than 50 days. It's been crazy. How are
Oh,
you?
I am also crazy. I mean, I am I'm not I'm running, but like in the next cycle, so I don't know how I would manage it if I was doing this now, because as you know, and as others may know as well, like earlier a couple of months ago, I lost my job and I had to go about finding a new one. So I was out of work for like a month, I think, and then I found a new job. So I've been like trying to get up to speed there and get set up with just my new people that I'll be working with, getting to know them, but also getting set up with like benefits and moving into a new place. So I've had a lot going on. And unfortunately, like my early days of my campaign have been neglected, but as things kind of like die down with the new job, I'll get back to it.
Awesome. Well, what an awesome praise report that you have a new job. There's so many people that can't say
Yeah,
that.
I know. I'm definitely fortunate. I have a friend who works in a different industry, but he's a friend of mine and he's a manager, and he actually had to lay off like several people today, and it really took a toll on him. So, I mean, I would hate to be in that position.
Wow.
Yeah,
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
it's a really tough time for a lot of people right now.
It almost feels surreal. Like, it feels like we are either watching a movie or reading a really, really insane book. It does not feel like this is our life. And I just can't believe that I'm living in a moment where, when I'm old and decrepit, I'm gonna have to explain this to my grandchildren, how we lived through this incredible, but just so di such a difficult time in history.
I agree. I mean, and people, I remember back when 9/11 happened, people were saying, you're going to remember this as the biggest moment in your lifetime. You'll be talking about this for the rest of your life. And yeah, we will be. But then we have so many other things on top of that. Like the punches just keep coming. And I think this has been a big, big punch to our lifetime. And we're going to be talking about it for many years to come.
Oh, yeah. On this podcast.
But yeah, I mean, like now is the perfect time though, I think, to discuss things like what's really going on in people's lives in terms of their material conditions and things like Medicare for All and UBI and like climate change. And like
Yes.
for me, I know this is like I'm going through this right now because I just lost my job, so I lost my health care for a while, and I just got a new job, so now I have to apply for new health care and go through that nonsense. And my new job is giving me a new provider that I've never had before. So I'm like asking a bunch of questions, and it's such a hassle just to try to sign up for health care right now. So I'm when people say like, oh,
Your health care should not.
right.
Period. And that is what seeing right now. You are a perfect example to that. Look at the role gone through insurance. it's not fair to the American people to say that you're. Did I lose you?
You broke up a little bit there. Yeah, you broke up a little bit. It's weird. You broke up a little bit, but I
Hello,
think what
Michael?
You were saying
I think
was
I...
that our
Yeah, I lost you. I don't know what happened.
Access to healthcare should not be tied to our employer, and I completely agree with you.
Yes, and I mean, and even if it is, like, for example, my insurance is tied to my husband's employment.
Right.
Even though we pay monthly, I still have to pay for everything until we meet our deductible. I pay for everything at cost. I got charged for, like, for blood work, and I thought, oh, isn't that included in the insurance? Like, oh, you have to meet your deductible before anything gets included.
Yeah, it's crazy. But so that was
what?
Kind of, that was what my
Is that a
former
new way to
health
do
plan
insurance?
was.
I've never
and I had
heard
a $4,000 deductible. And I was like, you want me to pay $4,000? That's like, I don't know, that was like maybe 2% or like 3% out of my annual income.
Yes.
But if I go to the hospital, I don't have $4,000 just sitting in my bank account ready to go to the insurance before they decide to get out their ass and pay for the rest of my coverage. And I think, you know, people don't know that, but your insurer can actually
Exactly.
deny coverage for things. Like this happened to my partner over the summer. He got a condition and he needed to see a specialist because he didn't know what was wrong. And he called the insurance company like 3 times just to make sure that this specialist would be covered. After 3 times, he still got a bill. Yep. And it's such a hassle to keep going to them and keep going to them. And then
no.
They tell you it's covered. And I kept telling him, get it in writing, because they will pull some shady stuff like that and then turn around and deny you coverage and you're stuck with a bill. And what can you do?
Yes. It's a shame that we live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and these are the things that we're suffering. Like, we're fighting just to live, just to get seen by a doctor. And I'm so excited for what is to come. I have seen so many progressives making it to that November ticket, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. Can you imagine what we can do? Imagine what we can do. People don't even understand what is at stake here. They don't get it. We need to get more progressives in office.
We had a particular, here in Massachusetts, we had a particular, well, I mean, we had most incumbents reelected. We had that, we had that election in the 4th district, and then We reelected Senator Ed Markey, it looks like, so that was a win for us. But we also had a couple of blows dealt to us. How did you guys, I also saw some,
Oh, we had some too. We had some too. It was bad for me. I was out for a week emotionally. I was out for a week, but you know what? People were like, you've got to look at the upside. Okay, we do have people that are making it in. I mean, look at Cori Bush, who came back strong. She lost, and she came back strong. You know, look at Marquita Bradshaw, out of nowhere. So they were like, you know, hold on to the hope. And I know that I wanted, especially the Fab Four, I wanted them so badly to make it to the November ballot, and they deserve to make it to the November ballot, but that just means that I've got to work harder to fight to make sure that
and I mean
we
and then
that
I mean tying that back to Medicare for All just
Florida.
For a minute and getting
I've got to win.
In office.
Period.
The big thing that a lot of pushback that we saw over the Democratic primary, and you know, it was kind of disingenuous the way that people were talking about this, the way the mainstream media formed it, was it's going to cost too much. It's too expensive. How are you going to pay for that? And, you know, I feel like we can pay for it because we're the wealthiest country in the nation and every other developed country can do it. But what do you say to people who say that we can't afford it?
Well, number one, I would say maybe if we taxed some of the wealthiest billionaires like Jeff Bezos, who didn't even pay one penny in taxes, not one. Why aren't we looking and knocking on those doors and asking those questions? How come they didn't pay any taxes? We don't have the money. We do have the money. We are spending trillions of dollars on the military. We can cut that down. And on top of that, your employer is spending money right now. On top of you spending money, you have spent the money. Why not pay a little more in taxes, but know that you're not going to be paying as much as you would be for your monthly insurance payment. And now your employer has some money that they could free up to pay some taxes and put it towards that. So there are so many ways. You see that when America wants to bail someone out, when we're ready to bail people out, no one asks where the money came from. It just appears. We're trying to save lives here. The question shouldn't be about, how we're going to pay for that. It should be about, when are we going to pay for it? Okay, great. Let's get it going.
In terms of like an economic theory of the case where it's like, yeah, we're paying for this, but also our employers are kicking in for this as well. And there's overhead costs associated with administering those benefits. Like an HR person, some poor HR person has to manage the benefits and administer those benefits to all the employees in a company. So really, I think a good case could be made from a business standpoint that says, hey, you could reduce your overhead costs and you won't have to pay for your employees' health insurance, and you won't have to kick in for anything because now we have a universal single payer system. You know, good luck, you know, create some more jobs, invest in your equipment, invest in your infrastructure, focus on growth, exactly. Focus on innovation. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a good way to go about it. Because the other theory, which I also agree with, is like, it's a human right. I absolutely believe in that. I absolutely believe that if your government is going to have, you know, even if your government is going to have a role in your life, because we constantly hear conservatives say, government, I want government out of my life. Well, shouldn't you at least, you know, pay the taxes to get you healthcare, to keep you alive? Like, I feel like that just makes sense to me. But I wonder why that message doesn't resonate with others across the aisle.
Well, listen, I really believe in storytelling, right? In the power of storytelling. And you have to be able to take control of the narrative. The people that are in control of the narrative right now are protecting their own interests. They're not going to, if Nancy Pelosi said the same sentence that I just said right now, everybody would be like, wow, let's get on board. But Nancy Pelosi is funded by Big Pharma. She has a special interest in not wanting to see something like Medicare for All be put on the table. So you know what I'm saying? Like we need to take control of that narrative. Progressives need to change
it. That's exactly
and
right.
Take
and
control
I think
of
you're
it
pointing to a
so
bigger
that
issue
we can
too, which is
debunk
that a
lot
lot
of
of
these
people
myths
in
that
Congress
are out
right
there.
Now, the people in power, don't share our lived experiences. They come from really wealthy families. They have a lot of generational wealth that gets passed down to them. They've never had to worry. They've never had to struggle. They've never had to file for unemployment. They don't have our same lived experiences. So when it comes to us asking for a seat at the table, they're like, who are you? We don't even know you. How did you even get here? That type of idea, this class divide, that's like, their world is so different from our world, and it just doesn't seem to resonate with them that they don't they can't even conceive of a world other than their own because they're so enthralled with it and they're big donors. And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem in representative democracy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And but the thing is, they have the people brainwashed. The people that vote them in, they have them so brainwashed. I go out and I talk to everybody, and I say, you know, I'm running against Frederica Wilson. I support Medicare for All, this, this, and that. And they're like, oh, but she's done so much for me. I said, okay, do you have insurance? Right. And they're like, no. I said, oh, okay. Well, then what has she done for you? She's done a lot for the community. She fought Trump. She fought Trump. I said, she fought Trump? And that is that's your reasoning? So you can't even tell me what she's done for you. We're dancing around this conversation. You're looking at me right now. You don't have health insurance. I'm telling you that I'm going to fight to get you health insurance, and you still want to vote for her for some reason. And they're like, she's been around for so long. She knows what she's doing. I said, you're right. She knows what she's doing, but you still don't have health insurance. Okay.
Yeah.
What can I do? I can't force anybody to want better for themselves. That's
such a hard case to make.
I wish I could.
When someone kind of throws that at you, like, oh, they've been there for so long. That's how it works. And to me, my response is, yeah, I want to change how that works because it's not working in our favor right now. I don't feel represented.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, some people, like on the far fringes, they're going to believe what they want to believe, and there's no changing their minds. And it can be difficult to have an honest conversation with them. And that's when, you know, you have to just kind of walk away, just be respectful and just, you know, let them live their lives. That's they live in a bubble. That's their bubble. there's no reasoning with someone who can't be reasoned with.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other thing, too, is that people are in such dire economic straits right now that they can't even think straight. And I'm in the middle of reading right now Andrew Yang's book, The War on Normal People, and I have never been more convinced we need a universal basic income.
I am so glad that you said that and that you brought that up. It makes so much sense. It makes more sense now because we have millions of people that are without a job, some jobs that will probably not come back. They won't. They're either going to be automated or they're not going to come back at all. I mean, think of all the events that are postponed indefinitely. You know, people that are entertainers or that work at events or, you know, just thinking of places that used to be packed that are not going to be packed anymore. They don't need all of this staff. So now what do you do? While you're trying to learn a new trade and figure out your life, you need an income. Think of all the parents that have been forced to leave their jobs because they have to homeschool their kids. I mean, that right there, who's paying our mothers?
Yeah.
Who's paying our mothers? Who's paying our fathers a salary right now? No one. These kids don't have paychecks to cut us. So we need to start talking about universal basic income. And right now, I'm going to be honest though, before we can even get to
passed a long time ago. It was sad to see like the provisions taken out that Pramila Jayapal had set up for that. But, you know, there was stimulus checks included in that. So I think it should be passed. I think we should have universal basic income. And I think that the case that Andrew Yang lays out in the book, which is pre-pandemic, is that people were already in such dire economic straits because of corporatism, because of non-enforcement of antitrust behavior, anti-competitive behavior, that now we're seeing these large corporations taking over and taking up mom and pops. And it's a huge barrier to entry for any young person trying to get into the market and innovate and create new products, create new solutions, because it's just so damn expensive. And universal basic income could free you up to say, work less and work on, you know, a product, a process, anything to help you get your piece of the American dream. And that's what he's really arguing for. And I don't know why people attacked him like he was crazy.
Okay, so I'm going to give you what everybody says to me when I talk about it, just so that we can just have an open conversation about the reasons why people may be against it. So one of the things that everyone says to me is, oh, people are not going to work hard. I tell everyone, $1,000 a month is not enough to live off of. So if you think that people are just going to automatically feel like they hit the jackpot, that now that they're making $12,000 a year, they're not going to work anymore, you are mistaken. You are mistaken. It's going to enhance their hard work. Everything that they've done, everything that they've worked so hard for, now they have extra money to breathe. They can pay for childcare. They can make sure that they don't lose their home. They can pay off some of their debt. They can catch up. This is an enhancement. This is not going to stop people from working. I strongly disagree with that. And I tell everyone, I have never met somebody that in my community right. that is working three jobs because they're lazy. They're hard workers by nature. You can't take that out of anyone. So that's normally what I say to you know, yeah. counteract that, because no, they are going to work. I know I will. I will work hard. I will just know that I have something to sort of fall back on.
And I would also add
that I have an emergency.
People, when they have that little wiggle room, that little bit of freedom, and they'll go out and maybe they'll volunteer in their community. Maybe they'll work on a project with somebody because maybe they can afford to work part-time with that. I don't know. But I think just automatically blanketing and saying everybody is lazy, human nature is to be lazy. Therefore, if we give them money, they'll just be free riders and be a drain on the system. And that's what we don't want. Now, of course, there's going to be a few people who are going to take advantage. Like, I'm not naive enough to think that there aren't people who are going to take advantage of the system, but I don't think it will be the majority. I think it would be a very, very small minority. And I think people generally are good people and want to work. They yeah. want to do something. And I think when we see homeless people, like for me, I used to be homeless. So all I wanted to do was work. All I wanted to do was find a job. And, you know, I was in dire economic straits as early as recent as 2017, which my tax returns will show you I made $4,000 that year. That was not a good year. And yeah. And I made that money largely by getting experimented on.
Wow.
And in the Boston area throughout the hospitals. So I've been a vaccine patient. I've done psychology clinical trials just so that I could afford to live. So that was not a good year, but all I wanted was the chance to have a job. I applied for every job, anything. And I had a bachelor's degree at that point. I theoretically, if you listen to what the proverbial they say, I should have been able to get a job anywhere, but I couldn't. And it was a really difficult time for me. So something like universal basic income would have had me make 16 grand that year. And I would have been in a little bit better position And I would have felt better about myself. I wouldn't have been so depressed. And things, I think, in general, would have been a lot better.
Yeah. There's something about not having access to money that makes you feel hopeless. And I know that firsthand. I can tell you stories on top of stories on top of stories. Some are current. You know, some are pretty recent. But I say that to say, this is ongoing. This is a lifetime of obstacles when you grow up, when you grow up as part of the have-nots. There are the haves and there are the have-nots. And I am part of the class of have-nots, but we work hard to get what we want. I thank God that my husband still has a job right now during this pandemic, so we to even get somebody. It's so difficult. It is. It's difficult. I can't afford to just get a babysitter. And my mother works full time, but she takes time off to do an interview or put up door hangers, you know? But I would pay for childcare, and that wouldn't make me any less of a hard worker. That would actually help me to work. If I had childcare with my universal basic income, I would be able to work harder, more efficiently, more effectively.
And I think that people don't hear that side because the thing is, in politics, what do they say? If you're explaining, you're losing. And I think that we have to change our perception of that at this point. We have to say, like, hey, we have these nuanced ideas. Something like what you're proposing is, if I had a universal basic income, I could afford childcare and I could go to work full time and, you know, be a productive member of society participating in this economy fully. And but you can't say that in like a soundbite that's a catchy slogan, which is what our politics is usually centered around. It's completely style over substance. And that's a huge disservice to people, whether you're in a congressional district at the national level or you're a president. So I think that comes from this attitude, and this is just my opinion, but I feel like there's this sentiment among the general public, like, even if we did price out things like Medicare for All, universal basic income, the Green New Deal, even if we did price it all out and it was a reasonable number and we could explain why we needed it and everyone was on board with it, there would still be that sentiment of this, like, this is how my dad used to be, like, well, even though we can get it, tell me why you deserve it.
Uh-huh.
You know,
because
that kind
I'm
of like really
because I'm yeah, a human that, being.
Yeah. And there's some group of people that's still never gonna be enough for them. And I feel like that is what we're looking at right now with a Republican Congress. Like that feeling is like, well, you don't deserve it yet. Like, you haven't earned it. But they give, and that's the worst part of that feeling is like, that's not actionable feedback for me.
Yeah.
You don't, exactly. You haven't shown me you deserved it yet is not actionable feedback.
Wow. You know, I feel like we just think the worst of each other. Like, yeah, what have you done to earn all of this? I'm living and breathing.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm still standing.
And my response would probably be something like, I don't know, I look at my taxes, I pay a lot. I think maybe I should be able to take advantage of that.
You know what's really funny is that most of Republicans are like evangelical Christians or whatever it is. And I myself am a hardcore Christian, But I tell people, really? Oh, okay. Did Jesus ask us if we deserve to be forgiven? Did he really? Like, did he go around asking for our credentials and what did we do to earn all of this? No, he didn't, right? Yeah, my friend the other day was like, Jesus was a socialist. For those of you that need to hear it, for those of you that probably don't want to hear it, Jesus was a socialist. There we go. Now, think about that.
It's so true, though. Like, I went to Catholic school. I say I'm a recovering Catholic because I feel like I'm a little bit more agnostic than a true devout Catholic. But I think that that's so true, that people often misrepresent the Bible, misrepresent things like, you know, they want to tell their own version of the truth. And when it comes to Republicans, I feel like the establishment Republicans are holding up a lot of things. And I think that there's a few Republicans that actually want to do something, but they're very few, and they get drowned out by the noise across the aisle. You know, some have suggested, like, oh, well, we have Medicare. Why don't we expand Medicare's role in negotiating with pharmaceutical companies or the insurance providers? You know, they're one of the largest purchasers of health insurance. How do they not have the power to negotiate? Because a lot of other companies that are large negotiate prices for goods or services.
You know, why do we need a middleman?
Yeah.
Why do we need a middleman?
Yeah. That's such a good question. It's within our power to get rid of it, but we won't do it.
No. We will. We need to get more progressives in office, but we will. It's going to happen because the momentum is picking up.
Yeah.
I really believe it in my heart. Oh, wow. It's so funny because we transitioned into UBI, but it still comes back to Medicare for All. And I feel like that's almost every conversation that I ever have. It's like it all comes down to being able to afford to live. And living means being in your best health. So many things are preventative. Like if we took preventative measures on a lot of things, there are a lot of people that have left us that would still be here.
Yeah.
And I would give anything to have my family members back. That, well, the only thing that was keeping them from living was having access to proper care.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I was just talking about this to my mom the other day because we were talking about, I think, something that she saw on TV. But she lives in LA County right now. And a few weeks ago, I shared that my uncle passed away. He died from coronavirus. And he died. I couldn't go visit him because our governor, Charlie Baker, was imposing restrictions on travel. And I couldn't leave Massachusetts and then come back for a while. So, and that just wasn't something that I could do. And then California was imposing really tight funeral restrictions. So they could only have like two or three people. So I was just like, you know what? I'm sorry, I can't go. I just can't. But she said something to me, like, people don't take this seriously until they lose someone from it. And it's so true. And it's not just coronavirus. It's any other preventable disease, like diabetes or cancer or anything like that. I mean, people don't take it seriously until they lose someone. And losing someone, like, that's the hardest part of this, because it shocks you. It pushes you into the reality of something uncomfortable that you don't want to talk about or deal with.
Yes. My husband lost his grandfather, not to coronavirus, but during the coronavirus. And my in-laws live in Puerto Rico. So the hardest part for us was not being able to go. We were into the funeral. My husband and his grandfather were very, very close. So that was just a really hard. In this new normal, you know, just like can't even say goodbye to the people that we love. And I just thought about that when you said that you couldn't travel. You know, the decisions that have been made by our government have hurt us beyond words. I mean, we can't take back this time. We can't. This has been mishandled. I mean, oh my gosh, so poorly. I am ashamed. I am ashamed of the way that this administration has handled this crisis. And now the fires, we have pandemics on top of pandemics. So we have a medical pandemic, we have a racial pandemic, and we have a climate pandemic. Poor Louisiana, who's getting hit left and right with hurricanes. We've got the whole West Coast up in flames right now. It is just back to back.
It's so crazy. And I mean, not to say that these things could have been handled, that, you know, if like, say, progressives were in charge, that they would have done a perfect job. Like, no one's perfect. But there were policy suggestions and measures that could have been taken if the appropriate political will had been there. And I think that that's something that we can't forget, because there were policy positions to say, you know, we're going to fund your unemployment, we're going to make sure that you're safe by imposing a rent and mortgage eviction moratorium, you know, and at the highest levels, they just decided that after a couple of months, they were like, yeah, we're just not going to come back to it. Those protections have expired. Good luck to you. And then all of a sudden now, California, Oregon, and Washington are on fire.
I literally am speechless. Yeah. I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say. When I see the memes, yeah, about like people putting their middle finger up to 2020, like you know what, we're done with 2020. I'm like, that is facts, like true story. We are done with 2020.
I feel like I lost a whole year though, because I've been inside for most of it, and I can't believe it's almost going to be 2021 now.
It is. And it is on us to make it. It is on us to make it count. 2021 has got to be the year of repair. We've got to fix it. Before we can make it better, we've got to fix it.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like a big part of the recovery effort is going to have to be on the West Coast. And that would be a good opportunity for them to take on some of, you know, the ideas in the Green New Deal, because that's really what it is. It's an idea, it's a resolution introduced on the floor of the House.
Yes.
That is a framework, a conceptual framework. People have called it a bill. That's misleading. But I read the Green New Deal. I've read the Green New Deal several times. And there are provisions in it that would help protect frontline communities like the ones in California, like the ones here in Boston, that are at the forefront of these crises. And I just don't see why there's no will to do it just because a freshman congresswoman introduced it. Just because she is who she is, like, that's no reason not to take it up.
Yeah. But you know what, I've come up with some words in my spare time. Like, you know what? There's just a whole bunch of Paula cliques. You know, like, these little cliques that stick together, and they're just like, oh, we don't like you, and we don't like you, and we do like you, and you know what? We'll listen to what you have to say, but it doesn't matter what you push, we're never going to back it. And it's just become, like, high school. I feel like this is just a bigger version of the movie Mean Girls. So, you know, we're not looking at the issues at hand, especially in a case like this, where it's like, let's look at the policy. Let's look at what it could do for us. Whether you like who introduced it or not, that's besides the point. The point is that we are trying to move forward here, and you're just holding us back.
I agree. And I mean, these things don't happen in a bubble, especially when it comes to talking about climate change, Medicare for All, UBI, like those things are all, in my mind, intertwined, they're intersectional. So like, especially when we're talking about climate change, something that's been really cool that just in my city, Boston has done is Imagine Boston 2030, which is a set of, it's similar to the Green New Deal, but it goes straight to the communities and it asks them, what do you need? And then it developed metrics of success to meet those needs in terms of climate, in terms of transportation, in terms of transit. And transportation and transit is my big thing, because when I used to go to work every day, I get on a bus and a train to go to work every day. And I've been on ones that have caught fire, and I don't want to die in a fiery bus accident. And I feel like a lot of people would feel that way too. So Boston came up with a couple of goals that I really like. So one of them was like, reduce the housing cost burden for Bostonians, improve health outcomes for all Bostonians, improve the walkability of each neighborhood, and keep Boston a safe city. I think those are just a few of the goals that they've mentioned, but I think those are some good goals to live by. And I want to focus on like improving the walkability of each neighborhood. Like, that Boston is a mode, walking is a mode of transit that I think Boston can utilize, just because our city is so walkable. And, you know, we have bikes, the city has announced. Welcome back from the break.
Yes.
So like the last thing I was talking about was Imagine Boston 2030, and something that our main transportation system is improving the walkability of the city of Boston, because it's such a small city. It's kind of like a more of a town feel. So you can walk, and they've talked about creating bus lanes, more dedicated bus lanes that passenger cars don't have access to, and improving our bike sharing programs. So in that vein, do you know of any initiatives, I guess, that are going on in your community that might be in a similar vein that people are working on?
No, not together. Not like that. That sounds amazing. I mean, as you're saying that, I'm just like, oh my gosh, can I take this idea?
Well, you sure can.
I mean, that sounds phenomenal. That shows that we're working together towards progress, towards the future. I really might bite off of that. Just want to put it out there in the world.
Yeah. Just type in Imagine Boston 2030. And I mean, it's public. And they've shown like what opportunity looks like, how they're going to meet the goals that they've set out for themselves as a community. So like the changes that we want to see, we've shown that we can do them ourselves. We can make them happen by ourselves. We just need the willpower to do it.
Wow. I'm really going to check it out. Like, really? You just like, I literally took out my pen and paper and wrote down Imagine Boston 2030. Love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I know last night the city of Miami, the county, had a budget meeting that was open. that was open to the public via Zoom, and the one of the commissioners that's running for mayor was speaking, and they're just talking about the budget, and everybody got to present. Like, I was working with this group that was waiting to present their idea for 2021, you know, what they want to do, and they skipped over them, which broke my heart. And then, so one of the mayors that was running, that is running for mayor, she was speaking, and somebody thought they were on mute, and they said, basically dropped an F-bomb to her. They were like, F you, and everyone heard it, because she wasn't on mute. And it was a funny moment, but then it was really sad, right? Because it shows that there's so much tension and animosity amongst our elected officials that, yes, of course, we can all make the funny jokes about, am I muted? But right now is the moment for us to start looking at, why are people so angry with each other? What are we not doing as a government to be in one accord with each other and let that translate down into the community? So I'm very big on, if your house isn't in order, how can you go into other people's houses and try to fix what they have going on, you know? And it just made me think a lot about the goals that I have when I'm elected, about getting us all on one accord, getting our house together. And that means bridging the gap between federal government, state, and local government. We all need to work together, because at some point we all need each other, and everyone's operating solo. I do my thing, you do your thing, but we should all be working together for the common good of the people. Why? Because it's still all of our people. Right. Florida is Florida, and when I go to represent my district, I'm going to represent everyone. Every time I vote, I'm not just voting for the 750,000 people that I represent, I'm voting for everyone. So we should be bridging that gap and working towards a common goal. Just like, you know, imagine Miami 2030. Like, that should be our goal, together, collectively working.
Yeah. And I love that you go to, you know, the municipal meetings, the town meetings, or the city council meetings, because that's so missing from, I think, leadership in general. I mean, there's a few that do town halls and stuff. I recently testified at Boston City Council because they were soliciting public testimony, because they, I think it passed, but they were restricting the use of chemical sprays and rubber bullets as a means of, you know, controlling crowds that are peaceful protesting. And I heard testimony from doctors, ER doctors, who had treated these injuries, because people think that, you know, just because they're rubber bullets, they don't do any damage. People have gone blind. People have died. And this doctor, she showed us these horrific, gory images. And I mean, I came into that table because I'm a bioengineer. I've studied what these chemicals do to our lung tissue and our cells. And they can have lasting effects. It's meant to be short term, but it's essentially chemical warfare that's choking humans as a means of getting them away. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't like to be choked out just for exercising my First Amendment right. So I don't think we should use chemicals to do it. And I don't think we should be physically choked out either. And I listened to all these police officers, and I finally had to say, like, you know what, I'm sorry, but we're not enemies here. We're compatriots in the struggle towards forming a more perfect union. And I think we should come to this table and be respectful of that, and, you know, look at my worldview as well as I'm trying to see your worldview. I get that you're an officer and you have a family to go home to, but so do I.
Oh my gosh, please tell me you have footage of that.
I do. I posted it on my Instagram.
Yes. Yes, I need to go. I'm going to go look at it. What a powerful presentation. Wow. And I'm sure that went a long way.
I think it did. And, you know, it was a really powerful meeting on Zoom. And then after me, there were a few people that testified about how Boston police were, you know, they were just protesting. And there were a few women after me that came on and said, you know, I was literally beaten by Boston police just by being a Black Lives Matter protester. And I was horrified at the things that they were saying. So it's a really, really powerful, it's a really, really powerful meeting. And Boston City Council keeps an archive of it on YouTube. So if you want to check it out, it's there. So,
you know, I don't really get a chance to speak too much at these different events like that, only because being on this journey, I feel like I have to tread lightly. You know, a lot of people see me as just coming out of nowhere. So when I go to these events, I really just sort of make my presence known, but not in a bold way. And I mean, that's so inspiring. I wish I had that kind of background and knowledge to be able to get up and say, listen, I'm a biochemical engineer and this is that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have that. But you're so inspirational. I know that I'm on your podcast, but I just wanted to ask you, what are you doing for your run right now?
So essentially what I'm doing is going, I live in an apartment building with several hundred units in it. So I'm going door to door and just asking, introducing myself to people as their neighbor. And I'm asking them, what do you think about your community? What are your concerns? I'm interested in representing you in Congress. And we just have these honest conversations about, it's mostly traffic and it's mostly work. And it's sometimes it's things that are like, you know, everyday things, like, you know, the upstairs person has parties and that lasts until 2 o'clock in the morning and I can't go to sleep and management won't listen to me. You know, it's, I think I'm just talking. I really love just talking and connecting with people and asking them about what their life is, because my philosophy about life is I want to understand what it means to be human. And I know that that has a lot of different meanings for people. So I try to ask people, I try to get the most out of my lived human experience. So that's number one, what I'm doing for my run right now. But the other thing is trying to get some finances together. So I think for me, like, the beginning of this campaign is probably going to be largely self-financed as I work on, you know, asking people for money. And we've gotten some small dollar donations, but I think I need to give people more of a reason to, I guess, believe in me at this point, because I'm a political newcomer. But I think I have some ideas that are resonating with people, and especially those that are centered around traffic and transportation, because I think those are the biggest problems that are facing this community right now.
Yes, yes. I remember on the last podcast, now I would agree with you, like, fundraising has got to be the focus. That is what I was told when I first started running. And even now, I didn't know I was going to be running during a pandemic, but I would recommend fundraise, fundraise, fundraise. And when you think that you fundraise enough, fundraise even more.
Yeah, that is going to be, I think, the biggest challenge of this all, because my opponent that I'm running against, and, you know, we'll see if I'm still running against him, because the districts are going to be redrawn. So I may not be in the same district that I am in now. I think that's unlikely, but, you know, he takes corporate PAC money, he takes insurance money, he takes money from the sugar industry. So he's really well funded. I think his last war chest count was like $1.6 million. So he's got enough money to run a really effective campaign if I get traction behind my campaign. So that's something that I'm always concerned about, and knowing that I will have to raise a significant amount of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I do want to thank you publicly for supporting my campaign, and just, you know, in many ways, more ways than one, but from the bottom of my heart, you have no idea how much you have really helped me. Just knowing that I have your support makes a difference. So please, just, I thank you so much, and I cannot wait to return the favor. I can't. And when I do, trust and believe, I am ride or die for you. We're getting you in.
I love that. All of my friends basically tell me that I'm ride or die, so I'm glad you said that too, and I'm reinforcing that. So it's the last few weeks till the election. What are you going to do? How are you, what are your last days look like leading up to the general?
Fundraise. Put up some door hangers, meet some voters, fundraise, and win.
Yes. Are you going to be hosting virtual events maybe?
I don't know if we're going to be hosting anything. We haven't planned anything yet. We have a lot of appearances lined up for different events, one with the incumbent. So just preparing for that and making my presence known there. That's the goal right now.
Awesome. I'm so glad. I'm so excited for you. I hope that you win. If I could vote for you, I would vote for you.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Well, I will let you get on with your weekend, and good luck. Tell people where they can find you.
Yes, you can go straight to my website, www.christineforcongress.org. You can follow me on Twitter, ChristineFOR24, or Instagram and Facebook at Christine for Congress.
All right, Christine, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Same to you. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.